You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Our third presenter is on my left, Mrs. Zoe Brand, who works as a research fellow at the Institute for Food and Development Policy in Oakland, California. She worked together with Mr. Marcelo Sanguier, a senior researcher at the Department of International Policy Relations at the Latin American School of Social Science. Zoe will present a paper to analyze the regional policy frameworks for the social and solidarity economy in South America.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you to the conference organizers and to Marcelo, who unfortunately couldn't be here to present with me. So today I'm going to present our paper, which looks at these emerging policy frameworks addressing SSE at the regional level in South America. And just to sort of situate it in the discussions that have been going on already throughout this conference, this really highlights this tension that has been mentioned between SSE as a project to bring about a new economic paradigm versus a sector set up to complement the existing capitalist paradigm. So I'm going to begin with some context, and then I'll go into the content of some of the programs that we looked at, and then briefly discuss the significance. And the main point today is that the policies that we're seeing emerge at out of regional governance institutions, specifically we looked at Mercosur and UNASUR, set up SSE to be a complement to dominant capitalist modes of production. So the context part, basically, has been mentioned before, the response to the failures of neoliberalism in South America generated a various reactions. And so because of that, the SSE sector is sort of a big tent. Some people have hesitated to call it a movement because of the fragmentation within it. Thank you. So on the one side of this large SSE tent is a current among civil society actors and practitioners really demanding a new economic paradigm, a very ambitious definition of SSE. And the culmination of these mobilizations at the regional level in a conference in Lima in 1997 defines the SSE sector as all economic activities and practices with a social finality which contribute to building a new economic paradigm. So you have sort of this grassroots organizing on the one hand with this very ambitious project, and then as it's translated into regional policy, you see this sort of lightening of this agenda where the social solidarity economy sector is framed as social policy targeting marginal areas, as sort of a some people have called a policy add-on, not mainstream policy, directed at the centers of economic production, rather directed at the periphery. And it's part of a larger social shift in response to the damaging effects of neoliberal policies, where you see sort of the emergence of a post-neoliberal regionalism where integration is increasingly sought on the basis of more than just trade. So you see regional governance organizations like Mercosur expanding their agenda to include social issues and political issues, and then you see the emergence of new regional governance organizations with more political goals. So in this context, we see the emergence of a number of policies with social aims and specifically using social solidarity economy discourse. And there's a lot of regional policy out there that affects the SSE sector. So because of the scope of this paper, we decided to look at specifically the primary programs that use SSE discourse in their policy making. And so those are coming out of Mercosur and UNASUR. And so there's a lot of acronyms here. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of the specific programs. I'd like to just, in the interest of time, go over sort of our main findings and the main trends that we saw coming out of these programs. And so Basically, the main argument here is that regional policy frameworks of SSE are structured as social policy, not economic policy, intended to bring about a paradigm shift. And as my colleagues here have mentioned, there are multiple policy realms to which SSE is relevant. And so essentially, the way that these programs are structured limits the impact of SSE to the social policy sector. And you see that happening because of the way that it is implemented. You know, it can be sort of difficult to tease apart economic and social policy if you look at the goals of policy. But looking at the institutional channels through which it's implemented and the policy targets is sort of the approach that we took to determine where this policy was aimed and what kind of policy this is. So you see this relegating of SSE to social policy or as an add-on policy happening in two ways. Basically, SSE and especially cooperatives are cast as drivers of integration, or the SSE sector in frontier areas is seen as a facilitator of cross-border commerce, and the cooperative movement in general as a driver of this new post-regional integration. However, the SSE sector is left out of major integration projects and their corresponding policymaking spheres. So there's no presence of the SSE sector in large infrastructure development projects like IRSA or the Productive Integration Plan. And so I just want to flag here, we're not saying that current integration efforts like IRSA are necessarily compatible with SSE principles as they are currently structured, but rather highlighting the contradiction in the way that the policy is set up, casting these as drivers of integration, yet not allowing them to come to the major integration party, essentially. And secondly, we see this happening because SSE policy is primarily targeting marginal sectors, populations in poverty, frontier areas in particular, and it is implemented through almost exclusively ministries of social development or ministries created specifically for the SSE sector. I believe in all of these acronyms here involved in these programs, there's one ministry of finance involved. So there's really kind of a lack of integration between the various ministries that have to do with economic and social policy. So the significance of this focus on SSE as social policy, you know, you might be saying, so what? This is a step forward, seeing these emerging frameworks addressing this sector. Perhaps it's not surprising that the SSE project would be translated into policy in a less ambitious way than originally proposed by civil society groups, since a complete overhaul of our current economic paradigm is a rather large project and threatens certain economic interests. However, I think it's important to flag the vulnerability of the SSE sector to competition and displacement by dominant economic sectors. So the coexistence of SSE with dominant sectors, as it, allowing it to be simply cast as a complement to the rest of the capitalist economy, isn't necessarily a harmonious or sustainable coexistence. In many cases, we're seeing the SSE sector vulnerable to competition by dominant industries, especially in the context of natural resource-based industries. Competition over finite resources like land and water has resulted in displacement or dispossession of many solidarity producers. And so, essentially, I think that as has been mentioned by my colleagues, there's missed opportunities to integrate social and economic policy and really allow the SSE sector to impact the full extent of the sectors it's relevant to. So the jury is still out with a lot of these programs. They're very new. These have emerged primarily in the past decade. And so the potential for these policies to bolster the SSE sector for and allow it to continue to grow and expand into the center from the periphery is certainly a viable thought and remains to be seen. So the idea is not to overly criticize the existing programs, but to sort of flag some of the limitations that they currently have and the way that they're structured. So I will end there in the interest of time. Thank you.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unrs.org. Thank you for listening.